I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Welcome to the A to Z of David Bowie. I'm Mark Riley, and that colourful character is Rob Hughes.
As you'll be aware, the A to Z of David Bowie is free to download.
Lunacy.
But if you'd like to support us along the way and be a member of an exclusive Bowie club, you can, and here's how.
There's an exclusive Bowie members club called Cheap Things, and for just $5 a month, wow, you can be part of it.
Why? So now you're thinking, $5 isn't much, but what exactly will I get for my hard-earned cash?
Well, in short, you'll get lots of great new exclusive material delivered to your door.
Well, computer, actually, Mark.
Via a system called Patreon.
That's right, Mark. Patreon is a payment system that allows you to contribute your monthly subscription and offers you a portal to access the exclusive material.
Material such as...
interviews with Bowie's cohorts and friends.
There'll be regular film Bowie quizzes.
Bowie guitar tutorials.
Unreleased archive written material.
Competitions.
And perhaps most impressively, short films featuring the Cheap Things team.
Ah, that'll be me, Mark, Howard Knock and Jason Reed.
Visiting various Bowie places of interest.
And much more besides.
All this for just $5 a month.
So if you can't resist, simply go to patreon.com, that's patreon.com/cheapthings, or one word, and join up.
There's also a website,
bowie@cheapthings.com.
Book early.
S is also for Starman.
Starman is a song by David Bowie, recorded on the 4th of February 1972 and released as a single in April. The song was a late addition to the rise and fall of Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, included at the insistence of RCA's Dennis Katz, who heard a demo and loved the track, believing it would make a great single. It replaced the Chuck Berry cover, Round and Round, on the album.
Yeah, more of which later, actually.
It's bonkers, isn't it? Yeah, but if you think about it, it was also... these things happen with albums, don't they? But Fill Your Heart... that replaced Bombers, didn't
it? That's right, yeah. Bombers is great.
On Hunky Dory. Oh, I would rather have had Bombers on
definitely.
There. And, you know, I mean, an old friend of mine, Guy Garvey, you know, Elbow, and particularly the early albums, I absolutely loved them.
Yeah.
And they weren't very commercial, and it did the job for them. But similarly, they took the album, Seldom Seen Kid, to the record company, and they're going, yeah, we love it. It's great. Can you just go away and write one more tune with the idea of it being a hit?
Right, and I didn't know that.
Right, okay. And they went off and did One Day Like This,
right,
which was then all over everywhere like a rash, and turned them into, you know, playing the arenas
throughout
Britain and Europe and all over the place. And so it's an old ruse doing this, but I mean, but to have the foresight to be able to do it and say that to somebody, and the courage to tell them that their album is lacking just one element.
Yeah.
And then also being able to actually go away and deliver something is an art form
in
itself.
That's another thing altogether, under a deadline as well. That's the thing. Because how many times do you kind of read about a band's history and then present a great album to somebody and saying, yeah, but we don't hear a hit? You know, and everything changes from that point, don't they?
Well,
depends who you're dealing with.
Yeah, we'll get into it here, won't we, with this particular song, because it did the job big style.
It did. Anyway, so the lyrics to Starman describe Ziggy Stardust bringing a message of hope to Earth's youth through the radio, salvation by an alien Starman. The story is told from the point of view of one of the youths who hears Ziggy, and according to Bowie himself, speaking to the author William S. Burroughs for Rolling Stone magazine in 1973, Ziggy Stardust is not the Starman, but merely his earthly messenger. So, contrary to receive opinion, which often paints Ziggy as the extraterrestrial himself. The song has inspired interpretations ranging from an allusion to the second coming of Christ to an accurate prediction of the plot for the film Close Encounters of the Third Kind.
Never thought of that.
No.
So the music is in a gentle pop rock vein, featuring prominent acoustic guitar and a string arrangement by Mick Ronson, not dissimilar to the style of Bowie's previous album, Hunky Dory.
Okay, so the chorus is loosely based on Harold Arlen's Over the Rainbow from the film The Wizard of Oz, alluding to the Star Starman's extraterrestrial origins over the rainbow. The octave leap on the word Starman, of course, identical to the word on the way somewhere over the rainbow, which Bowie was only too happy to display as he did at the rainbow in August of 72 when he sings Judy Garland's line instead of his own at one point.
Yeah, I've got that bootleg.
Oh.
It's called Bowie Over the Rainbow, I think. Yeah. Other influences cited for the track are T-Rex songs Telegram Sam and Hot Love, the Boogie references in the La 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 chorus, and Holland Dozier Holland, You Keep Me Hanging On, with a ding 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 ding. That makes sense.
Yeah.
From a commercial point of view, Starman was a milestone in Bowie's career, not half. His first hit since 1969 Space Oddity, 3 years before Enemy critics Roy Carr and Charles Shaw Murray. They always put these in together because it's a book that they wrote together and they don't know who to particularly credit. But anyway, reported that many thought it was his first record since Space Oddity and assumed that it was a sequel to the earlier single.
Yeah, which you can see as well, can't you? Thematically, anyway. The single initially sold steadily rather than spectacularly, but earned many positive reviews. John Peel, for instance, called it a classic, a gem. And of course, as we've discussed, its big turning point came when Bowie appeared on Top of the Pops in July 1972 and did Starman. Although this performance, recorded on the 5th of July, broadcast on the 6th, often cited as being the first UK TV performance of the song, as we know, and as you saw, it was actually happened 3 weeks earlier when on Lift Off with Aisha.
Yeah, it was a few weeks ago that I had Woody Woodmansey on the Six Music programme.
Yeah.
It was on David's birthday, actually. Because you interviewed Aisha, and you found out that some Muppet, somewhere along the line, not that long ago, because we all thought, and Woody thought, Woody didn't know this story.
Oh, didn't he?
No, the fact that we all thought that it had been erased pretty much straight after the event, because nobody had seen the footage of it, apart from when it went out live.
Yeah.
And then you found out from Aisha that some Muppet had been given two piles of tapes, and one pile was to be just like forgotten about and discarded, and the others were to be copied. And he got the two piles mixed up, and then erased what included David Bowie and the Spiders doing that, which is just, hurt someone. Even Woody was like, really?
Really? He didn't know that, did he?
He didn't have a clue, no.
Okay.
Okay, moving on. Bowie's performance with the Spiders became famous. According to the author David Buckley, many fans date their conversion to all things Bowie to this Top of the Pops appearance. It embedded Ziggy Stardust in the nation's consciousness, helping to push Starman to number 10 and the album, released the previous month, to number 5. The single remained in the UK charts for 11 weeks. Top of the Pops performance is included on the DVD version of Best of Bowie. Here's something for you.
Go on.
And so the actual DVD version of Bowie doing Starman, that is actually taken from a repeat at Christmas. Okay, so you know, like at Christmas, they would give you the best of the year. And it featured a DJ who I won't even mention, doing a voiceover at the end of the La La's.
Oh, really?
And Nigel got in touch with me, Nigel Reeve, who does all the mastering and the Bowie stuff, and he says he haven't got a bootleg of the original version of Starman, because obviously the vocals were live.
Yeah, sure.
So he says you haven't got a bootleg of that, have you, where Bowie's doing the La La's live on the original broadcast of it. I might have, why, are you going to take me to court? No, we could be borrowing it. And so what they did, they ended up taking off the end section of my CD.
Right.
And dubbing it onto the DVD. Oh,
wow, I didn't know that, wow.
So that's my little part of Bowie.
So you're to thank for that then?
Well, no, Nigel's to thank for it. And I'm just a criminal.
You had the source. Well, I knew that already, Matt, but you had the source material through your criminality.
You might well see me on Crime Watch and say, have you seen this man? Apparently he's got a bootleg of David Bowie doing Starman on Top of the Pops first time round. But it was a funny little diversion.
Oh, great. So in the US, the single got to number 65 on the Billboard Top 100 in August 72. In addition to the TV shows, Bowie played the song for radio listeners on the BBC's Johnny Walker lunchtime show on the 22nd of May 72. This performance was broadcast in early June that year, eventually came out on Bowie at the Beeb in 2000.
Mentioned Johnny Walker there. He was absolutely pivotal. I mean, we know from doing all this and knowing more about Bowie than we probably should, the other people who were heavily involved, like Bob Harris particularly, and John Peel. But Johnny Walker, for the daytime, the mainstream access to Bowie, if you like, he was it. As far as I was concerned, Johnny Walker was Mr. Bowie.
Right.
He played them all the time. He was really, really mad, enthusing about it. He used to do the chart show as well. And he was just our lifeline to Bowie. Because I wasn't listening to John Peel in 1972.
I was going to say, that doesn't really get mentioned much, does it? It's always about Peel and Bob Harris and the, sort of the underground DJs, if you like.
Well, for a lot of the people who were in my situation who saw either Lift Off with Aisha or Top of the Pops, then if you wanted to listen to Radio one during the day and be sure of hearing David Bowie's Starman. Ah. You would listen to Johnny Walker.
Wow.
So respect is due to Johnny Walker.
Yeah, in Nick Pegg's brilliant Complete David Bowie book, he tells the story of a recording of Bowie playing Starman to Ronson for the first time. It was given by Ronno to a mate who later sold it online and somebody bought it.
Right? That's weird. I wonder if Bowie ever bought that kind of stuff.
You'd be tempted, wouldn't you? I mean, if it was me, I would have been, I think. I mean, you'd want to own it, wouldn't you, really?
Knowing what a completist Bowie was, particularly through the David Bowie Is exhibition, you would have to wonder, and being, well, loaded.
Yes.
Then you see something like that coming up and thinking, well, that's really a part of my history and it does belong to me, but I'll buy it and keep it out of somebody else's mix, if you like. I just wonder. So here we go. This is a very important development. The 15th of June, Ziggy and the Spiders have a show in Coventry, but it's cancelled. This allows a band without Nicky Graham, who we want to talk about in a moment, to go to Manchester, to Granada Studios, talked about it before, to record Liftoff with Aisha. And, you know, it was a big, big moment, as I know, for those who are lucky enough to see it. And it's a stuff of myth because of the reason that was said before about erasing it.
Yeah.
But Nicky Graham, just want to interject at this point in time, it was only a couple of weeks ago I had a band called You Tell Me live in session.
Oh, great.
Featuring Peter Brewis from Feel Music. Yeah. And we were talking about the Bross documentary, as everybody was then, and still to an extent is now.
Yeah.
And we were talking about the various things, like he goes off on one about the world at the moment, and what really, really is upsetting him is the fact that you can't play Conkers anymore.
That's right. It's great.
It's priceless.
I can't recommend it enough.
I mean, it's really some very poignant bits as well. But you should watch it. You don't even have to like music to enjoy it. It's just incredible. But it transpired. So Peter Brewer said to me, he said, yeah, I've seen it, this, that, and the other. We were having a laugh. And he went, that's weird, isn't it? How one of Davey Bowie's band wrote some of the songs for Bross and produced them. I was like,
really?
What? And he said, yeah, I can't remember. He's a piano player. I said, well, not Nicky Graham. I knew he wasn't Rick Wakeman.
No.
And I knew he wasn't Mike Garson. So being clever, I said, not Nicky Graham. That's him. I'm sure that's right. I've read it somewhere. So I immediately went on to Wikipedia. And sure enough, Nicky Graham, he worked with Bowie in 1972 on the first Ziggy tour. But he's from South Africa.
Right.
And he went on to be a producer and an arranger and writer for Bross. He wrote Let's Get Ready to Rumble for Ant and Dec and produced it. He worked with Shaking Stevens.
Did he really?
He just loads of stuff.
That's great.
So, I mean, and I got onto Blam, Mark Adams.
Yeah.
And he didn't even know that. I mean, he knows everything.
He does know where he is, the font of all knowledge.
There will be people out there going, oh, we knew this. And that's fine, but I didn't. You didn't.
No, I didn't.
It was just, I thought that was absolutely
brilliant.
That's
a great connection. It really is.
I also spoke to a main man fella, Di Davies. Yeah. Now, I know Di because he used to work a band that I was a plugger for called Levitation.
Oh, yeah.
And it was the guy I was working for who hired his company. He said to me, you worked a lot with Bowie, you know. So I asked him about it at the time, going, yeah, I work for Main Man. And so I'm going to again catch up with him for cheap things.
Okay, brilliant.
I will be catching up with him about it.
Yeah.
But he told me that he was Bowie's press agent, Anya Wilson. She knew the booker at Granada. And so it's quite possible that when this opportunity arrived, she just got in touch with the booker and said, I've got David Bowie, I've got Ziggy and the Spiders available, we've got a night off, have you got a slot for us? Because it was last minute, and they went off and did it, and that was so important.
These
as well.
Are great moments, aren't they? So, talking of which, Wednesday the 5th of July now, 1972, Top of the Pops, which is the big pivotal moment for most Bowie fans. Do you know what? The bloke on the stage, I didn't know this until you did these notes, the bloke on the stage right wearing a yellow suit was the tour manager, Will Palin.
No, I didn't know that either.
The band stood next to Status Quo in the corridor. I remember talking to Woody about this some years ago, waiting to go take the stage. The Bedenim Francis Rossi apparently said, shit, you make us feel old. Pivotal, because we've got all the great glam gear on. And pivotal moments of that performance itself, the stuff that people really remember, of course, Bowie putting his arm around Ronno. Just that great moment. And most of all, looking down the lens of the camera and pointing towards us.
Well, that was it, yeah.
That was a real sort of big moment, I think. So, you can be us, we are you, that kind of thing. The costumes, the song, the whole thing, the perfect package.
Yeah, it was ace. It was just ace. When you think of all the songs in between Space Oddity and Starman, which weren't about space, it is a bit of a coincidence, isn't it?
Yeah.
That his two hits were space-oriented.
Absolutely.
Cosmic Jive, we're talking, aren't
we?
Yeah,
of course, absolutely. So, I did a piece on Starman for Uncut Magazine. I thought it was like maybe, 5 years ago? It turns out 10 years ago now.
Time flies.
So this was the first time I was lucky enough to speak to Ken Scott, the producer. Ken's had his memory. He said, we went back into the studio to do Starman in January 72 after we'd done the rest of the Ziggy album, which, as you mentioned at the start, it was somebody at RCA, Dennis Katz, who suggested we do it. I really don't know if the directive came from America or England. All I know is that they told us there's no single, go back in and do one. And that was Starman. From what I remember, we initially had Chuck Berry's Round and Round on the Ziggy album, so Starman replaced that, and it all came together very quickly, maybe in just one day.
Wow, Mick Ronson did the arrangements for strings and guitar on Starman. We all just instinctively knew what we were there to do, and it all just fell into place. That Morse code sound on there is actually piano and guitar done on three-track. I do lectures these days, and in the beginning, this is still Ken Scott, not me. I don't do lectures. that was one of the things I used as an example of individual pieces and how they're put together. It's basically a piano and two guitars an octave apart. Then we bounce them all down together to make one track. It seemed to make sense in that there was this idea of something coming from a distant planet. So he put it all through a phaser.
It's ingenious, isn't it?
It just brilliant. Works so well, yeah.
He then said about Bowie's trajectory, he said, I guess it happened very quickly once David had done Starman on Top of the Pops and the Ziggy album was out. I have a distinct memory of sitting in the reception area at Trident Studios reading the paper when Elton John's producer, and of course Bowie's producer, Gus Dudgeon, walked in and congratulated me. I looked at him and said, what the hell for? And he said, Ziggy went into the charts at number 7 this week. I just went, fuck me. It just blew me away. After the non-success of Hunky Dory, almost immediately after it came out, the Ziggy album was in the top 10. I've always had my thoughts, he said, as to whether Tony DeFries, Bowie's manager, paid a lot of college students to go out and buy it on that first week, though I have no proof of it.
Well, we'd best steer clear of that. Yeah. But what I would say is that there is no doubt of the groundswell that happened the following day after it. I mean, it's been talked about so much, but yeah. I mean, it was. I was there. And yeah, Lift Off With Aisha kind of came and went. But yeah, Top of the Pops didn't. That was the one that just set everybody off, running. And also becoming very partisan, either like David Bowie or Slade. That was kind of like that day in the playground was when people started looking at each other, a bit leery, shall we say, and thinking that if you're a Slade fan and you like Noddy Older and those guys, you might well want to go over there and wallop the people who like David Bowie.
The lines were drawn.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The A to Z of David Bowie with Mark Riley and Rob Hughes.
S is for Soul Train.
Oh, yes, Soul Train, an American TV show which aired in syndication from October 71 until March 2006. In its 35-year history, the show primarily featured performances by R&B, soul, dance and hip-hop artists, although there's room for jazz, funk, disco and gospel people in there as well. It was created by Don Cornelius, who also served as its first host and the executive producer, and it transmitted over 1,000 episodes from its debut through to the 2005-2006 season.
Wow, that's a long run.
It is a long run, yeah.
So the origins of Soul Train can be traced to 1965 when WCIU-TV, a station in Chicago, began airing two youth-orientated dance programmes, Kiddie A Go-Go and Red and Hot Blues. These shows especially the latter, which featured a predominantly black group of in-studio dancers, would set the stage for what was to come for the station several years later.
Don Cornelius himself was a newsreader and was a backup DJ at Chicago radio station WVON, was hired by WCIU in 1967 as a news and sports reporter. Cornelius was also promoting and emceeing a series of concerts featuring local talent, sometimes called record hops, at Chicago high schools, calling his travelling caravan of shows the Soul Train. CIU-TV took notice of Cornelius' outside work and in 1970 allowed him the opportunity to bring his roadshow to the TV.
The first episode of the programme featured Jerry Butler, the Shy Lights and the Emotions as guests. Each guest usually performed twice on each show. After their first number, they were joined by the host on stage for a brief interview.
That's how it all went. Soul Train was also known for two popular catchphrases, referring to itself as the hippest trip in America at the beginning of the show and closing the programme with, "And you can bet your last money it's going to be a stone gas, honey. I'm Don Cornelius, and as always in parting, we wish you love, peace and soul." Anyway, enough of that. Let's get to Bowie, shall we? This is from the Boston Globe in 2016.
Okay, here we go. On the 4th of November 1975, David Bowie appeared on Soul Train. He wasn't the first white solo artist to perform on the landmark show, as had been claimed. Elton John claimed that auspicious slice of history months earlier. But you say, actually, it was Motown guitarist Dennis Coffey.
It was, yeah. He was the first white player on that. Yeah.
But make no mistake, this was an equally seminal event.
To be clear, they continue, Soul Train didn't need Bowie. From the show's 1971 day, it was instantly must-see TV for many young African-Americans and anyone else who wanted to be down with the best music around. Soul Train wanted Bowie on its stage. Already a star in rock circles, Bowie, by the mid-70s, had begun to indulge his love of the American soul music, first caught his ear as a teenager back in England. And black radio stations that never thought twice about The Man Who Sold the World or Changes ate up Fame and Golden Years, the two songs that Bowie would perform on Soul Train.
Creator and host Don Cornelius gave Bowie, whose name he pronounced as Bowie, an effusive introduction. "We're very proud to have with us one who is easily one of the world's most popular and important music personalities. A great welcome, gang, for the gifted singer, composer, producer, Mr. David Bowie."
Hooray! In a periwinkle blue suit and a yellow shirt, here was Bowie, his hair a brassy two-toned strawberry blonde, a pale, thin Brit amid a sea of afros rising like the morning sun. What a great description there, Mark. When Bowie shakes Cornelius' hand, he seems shy and nervous. Bowie hadn't done much American TV, and now he was on a stage once graced by his musical idols like James Brown. This was hallowed ground, and Bowie, then 28, reportedly downed a few drinks backstage just to, you know, steady the nerves.
Fair enough. Alone on stage, Bowie lip-synced, and sometimes quite indifferently at that. Still, when he performed Fame, his first chart-topping US hit, the audience yelped at his sinewy dance steps, and Bowie clearly revelled in it, grinning like a kid. Perhaps a crowd saw in Bowie a bit of themselves. They certainly understood what it meant to be treated as outsiders and to forge that status into a culture much envied and imitated. Bowie built his career as a champion of outcasts and misfits, those who become triumphs of self-invention.
I have to say, you know, some of my favourite clips of Bowie on Soul Train, just because he's just not with it.
But yeah.
It's so great, though. It's such an unusual setting, isn't it, for somebody like that to be on that stage.
And he's dancing, he's quite awkward, isn't
yeah.
it? But you can see that he is loving it, and that is being embraced and accepted by the culture that, yeah. that he jumped in on. Unless we forget, I mean, you know, was it Paul McCartney said, "We did Rubber Soul, he's done Plastic Soul."
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, not everybody will have been absolutely taken with Bowie's
no.
direction, but if he's got this audience on his side, he wouldn't care.
Yeah, also give him a, you know, a sense of authenticity, you could say. So in a Q&A before his Soul Train performances, one audience member asked him, "When did you actually start getting into soul music? You know, when did you start wanting to do soul music? I mean, you're doing it now." And Bowie gave a bit of a garbled answer. He just wasn't in any fit state, I don't think, was he?
Rolling Stone later called Bowie the whitest man ever invited onto Soul Train. First, Bowie mutters at the floor until a worried-looking Don Cornelius says, "Okay, David, I think we have to move on." He then mimes his way through Golden Years, even though he can't remember the words. "I hadn't bothered to learn it," Bowie confessed later.
Great, isn't it? So there is a transcript here of the full interview. It's not quite on a Russell Harty status here, but, you know, it gives an indication of perhaps where Bowie was at, you know, mentally anyway. So you're going to play the part of Don Cornelius, aren't you?
I am, yeah. So a great welcome, gang, for the gifted singer, composer, producer, Mr. David Bowie.
I'm Bowie, thank you.
Hi, David.
Hello.
Nice to have you with us, and I think our folks would probably like to ask you some questions after.
I'd adore to answer them.
After I get my dumb ones out of the way.
Oh, yes, I have some dumb answers.
I understand you just did a film.
Yes, the director of the film is called Nicholas Rogue, who started out as someone I didn't know and ended up as a friend of mine. And it's called The Man Who Fell to Earth. And it's a bit like a Howard Hughes story, but he's sort of an alien. But he doesn't look like a sort of an alien.
What part did you play in the film?
And Bowie just doesn't say something incomprehensible here.
Right, and then he says, fantastic.
Yeah, but it's one person, but it looks like it, says Bowie.
Right, what does he mean by that?
I'm not sure.
And then, all right, Don says, mm-hmm. And you're also doing a world tour soon that will take you to Russia.
So, changing the subject. Yes, says Bowie, I hope so. We've asked if we can play in Russia.
Have any other contemporary music acts played in Russia that you know of?
No, answers Bowie.
So you'll start in the United States and go around the world, probably, and among other countries?
And end up in the United States again, finishes Bowie.
And end up in the United States again? Fantastic. Let's see what we've got here. So this is where the audience member says, hi, my name is Ella Walker, and I would like to know, do you plan on doing any soundtracks for movies?
And Bowie says, I'm doing the soundtrack for The Man Who Fell to Earth, and he starts laughing, with a friend of mine, Paul Buckmaster.
Yes, another audience member, my name is David Vincent, and is it true that you're going to be teaming up with Elizabeth Taylor to do a film?
Bowie starts laughing at this point and says, no, isn't David Vincent the character from The Invaders?
He was.
Great? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely, and we've been through the Elizabeth Taylor thing, but
yeah,
he had one frosty meeting, and then there was all kind of, to which he was very, very late.
Yes.
He had a squeeze, the photograph was taken.
Yeah.
And then he scarpered.
That was it. That's the end of that liaison.
Another audience member said, yes, my name is Glenn Stafford, and I'd like to know, when did you actually start getting into soul music? You know, when did you start wanting to do soul music? I mean, you're doing it now.
Bowie was laughing again at this point. Getting into it? Well, back in England, you see, when I was a teenager, Popperingham, you know, I don't know, it's a similar expression over here, on street corners. We have street corners in London. And then, in brackets here, David laughs at his own joke, but nobody knows what the hell he's talking about. And we used to go to a lot of clubs, and James Brown's very popular about then. I was about 17 then.
And then Don says, OK, David, I think we have to move on to your first song, which I believe is your latest single?
Yes, he says. It's called Golden Years.
So he was bumpy and awkward, and but he was probably on drugs, and he'd certainly had a few drinks, and
certainly.
It's still absolutely gripping to watch.
Brilliant.
The A to Z of David Bowie, with Mark Riley and Rob Hughes.
S is also for Stewie George.
Yorkshireman Stuart George was a friend of Mick Ronson's from Hull, who had initially worked with the Rats. Introduced by Ronson to Bowie, Stewie George became his personal minder on the Ziggy Stardust tour of 1972.
And he needed him. In Paul Trinker's Starman biography, George is described as an old Hull mate of Ronno's with a noticeable limp. Bowie met him for the first time during a trip to Hull to visit Mick Ronson's family in February of 1970.
One of the best descriptions of him can be found in Woody Woodmansey's book, Spider from Mars. During the early part of the Ziggy tour, Bowie needed some help to combat some of the more antagonistic audiences. Woody writes, after another show, when the atmosphere got threatening again, Bowie said to Mick, you said you have a roadie with the Rats who was pretty tough. Is that right?
Yeah, so reading from Woody's book now, Spider from Mars. He says, yeah, Stewie George, Mick replied. He lined up an entire audience against the wall once and made them shut up. Okay, this was true, writes Woody. Our mate Stewie was as hard as nails. The Rats played a gig at Cottingham Hall near Hull back in 1969, and there was some aggression from the audience. Stewie went out there and made every single one of them stand against the wall, the side wall of the venue, until they'd calmed down. Why don't you ask if he wants to come and work for us? Asked Bowie.
So it continues, Stewie was a black ex-boxer and, that old chestnut, a lovable rogue. If I ever questioned him about his past, he would grin cheekily and say, it's all just rumours, Woody, just rumours. He could always take a joke, which, being around the Rats, was fortunate. I remember his girlfriend once banned him from coming to a gig with us in Leeds, a situation he took seriously. After 10 minutes of our jibe, saying like, it's all right, Stewie, we understand. What's it like being under the thumb? And so now we know who wears the trousers. He got in the back of the van with the equipment.
Okay, great. Continues here. My girlfriend could be waiting somewhere down the road, he said. She'll probably flag you down, but don't say anything or I'll get killed. Half a mile down the road, writes Woody, there she was. We pulled up alongside her and wound down the window. Have you seen Stewie, she asked. Yeah, he's hiding in the back of the van, we chorused. Like it.
She started to scream abuse at him from outside while Stewie banged on the partition. Just go, just drive. So you've got this real hard nut terrified of his girlfriend. He later got in the front of the van with us and said, you lot are a bunch of bastards. You got me in so much trouble, but he could always take a joke.
Love it. So Stewie joined us from Hull, moving into a flat in Beckenham. He came to every gig we did on the Ziggy tour after that, Tony Frost joined him not long afterwards because he'd done martial arts and was another tough guy. We were relieved because in the end, somebody would definitely have got hurt if we continued with no security. The mere presence of those two mean-looking dudes was enough to stop any potential trouble from then on.
Brilliant. And if you haven't got My Life with Bowie, Spider from Mars, Woody Woodmansey, then you really should get it.
You should.
It is ace. Okay, yeah, so, let's continue.
Yeah, so Stewie George was at key events like the Oxford Town Hall gig in June 72, which we've covered, scene of Mick Rock's famous fellatio guitar shot of Bowie and Ronson. George recalled later of the night, what you have to remember with David is that everything is choreographed. So he understood him, certainly. He was present at a crucial meeting also at a restaurant on King's Road in London when he remembered manager Tony DeVries almost turning to Bowie and giving him like an ultimatum. He said, look, do you want to be a star or do you want to be famous or do you want to be rich, famous and a star?
As Bowie's popularity grew, the Spiders moved out of Haddon Hall and rented their own flat on Beckenham Road. Stewie George was their lodger. During the sessions for Motley Hoople's All the Young Dudes in May 1972, he was roped in by Bowie and Ronson to provide hand claps.
I didn't know that. All right. At a gig at Dunstable Civic Hall in June that year, George accidentally set off the sprinkler system during the stage setup, flooding the stage and backstage area. Roadie Will Palin later recalled, I can still remember the water dripping on Woody's head during the show.
Once Bowie became more famous, Stewie George became more valuable in his role. Mike Harvey, the owner of Ziggy Stardust Companion website, told a Scottish Courier about the mayhem at Bowie's Caird Hall gig in Dundee in May 1973.
So, 73, it's all going on, isn't it? He said it was Bowie mania at its height, sort of like for the Beatles, but this time in reaction to Bowie's Ziggy Stardust phase. At the Caird Hall, Bowie was saved from being trapped by fans at his car by bodyguard Stewie George. Stewie George became Bowie's bodyguard stroke minder and rescued Bowie from over-exuberant fans and unsavoury characters on a number of occasions during those tours.
He was the first of three main bodyguards employed to protect Bowie. They did this by wearing karate suits with Maoist-like armbands titled Bowie and were well known for confiscating film from unauthorised photographers' cameras.
Ooh, okay. Later on, though, so in February 2016, a month after Bowie's death, Stewie George said that Bowie once had a threesome with Mick Jagger and an unnamed famous female singer in a walk-in wardrobe at the New York Plaza Hotel.
George also revealed that Bowie banned ballet dancer Rudolf Nureyev from joining in despite him pleading to be let in. He says Rudolf Nureyev was partying with them but spotted them sneaking off and wanted to join in and said, I have to be in there. I politely said, no. I was under orders. David, Mick and the woman were in the closet for 20 minutes and came out with big smiles. It was obvious what had been going on.
Yeah, probably hanging up coats, I imagine.
I would imagine so. So that's it for this episode of the A to Z of David Bowie. But once again, before you go,
if you'd like to support us along the way and be a member of an exclusive Bowie club, you can. And here's how.
There's an exclusive Bowie members club called Cheap Things. And for just $5 a month, wow, you can be part of it.
Right. So now you're thinking $5 isn't much, but what exactly will I get for my hard-earned cash?
Well, in short, you'll get lots of great new exclusive material delivered to your door.
Well, computer, actually, Mark.
Via a system called Patreon.
That's right. Right, Mark. Patreon is a payment system that allows you to contribute your monthly subscription and offers you a portal to access the exclusive material.
Material such as
interviews with Bowie's cohorts and friends.
There'll be regular filmed Bowie quizzes.
Bowie guitar tutorials.
Unreleased archive written material.
Competitions.
And perhaps most impressively, short films featuring the Cheap Things team.
Ah, that'll be me, Mark, Howard Knock and Jason Reed.
Visiting various Bowie places of interest.
And much more besides.
All this for just $5 a month.
So if you can't resist, simply go to patreon.com, that's patreon.com/cheapthings, or one word, and join up.
There's also a website,
bowiecheapthings.com.
Book early.